Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Take me to heart, and I'll always love you.
I'm Rachel Elliott. My first novel is Whispers Through a Megaphone. I'm very happy to be here.
Whispers Through a Megaphone.
Yes.
Your first novel.
Yes.
Introduce us to your two main characters and the plot of Whispers Through a Megaphone.
Okay. Well, the main character is Miriam Delaney, and she's 35, and she can only speak in a whisper. And as the book opens, she hasn't left her house for 3 years, not since the day after her mother's funeral, when something happened in the woods that made her run home and lock her door behind her. So she's kind of been in a bit of a fugue state in the house for 3 years. And the book is about her story. She had a slightly crazy and cruel mother who was quite abusive to her, which is the reason why she only whispers. And as the book opens, she's getting to the stage where she wants to come out of the house. She wants to live. She's standing looking through the window. She wants what other people have, and she thinks she might be ready. She's not sure, but she has the desire. It's there. She's about to leave. And then across town, we have my other main character, who's called Ralph Swoon, and he's a psychotherapist. And he is lost and confused. He's... the best way to describe him, probably, which is how I describe him in the book, is he... You know that feeling you have when you go into a room to find something and you forget why you've gone in there? That's kind of what it's like inside his head. It's woolly. He doesn't... He knows things that he doesn't yet know, and it kind of creates this confusion because he's pushing things down that he knows. And he's married to Sadie Swoon, and she is addicted to Twitter. He doesn't know that all his clients are following her on Twitter and reading her blog. You know, his private life is out there. And she throws a birthday party for him. And during that party, he finds her kissing someone in a cupboard on the landing. And it's kind of like one of those moments. It's kind of like the last straw. And he leaves the house. He doesn't tell anyone where he's going. And he walks to the woods. And he just sleeps there for a few days. Until a few days later, Miriam Delaney comes running into the woods. And the story continues from there.
It unfolds from there.
Yeah.
Struck me that Mr. Swoon...
Yes.
...has had sort of an accidental life up
yes.
until then. And that the decisions in his life have not been his own, including what wakes him up and brings him back to himself.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people's lives... feel like that.
Yes.
One of the major things I would say about your book is that, you know, unlike Virginia Woolf's Stream of Consciousness, it's sort of like Stream of Neuroses. Yeah. Because you give us this wall of interior sound in your characters' right. heads.
Yeah.
And what it really spoke to me is sort of the everyday crazy.
Mm.
We're all crazy.
Absolutely.
We're all nuts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I mean, I think the being middle-aged is, by definition, bipolar.
Mm.
You know? you're between poles.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
constantly pinging
yeah.
back, you know, death in front, youth behind, you know, grasping at either end.
Yeah.
Between children and parents, between,
yes.
you know...
Yes, sheer world of crazy.
Yeah.
Well, it's great that you say that, because that's what I wanted Miriam to confront, because she is someone who believes that she's crazy. She looks out the window and she thinks that everybody else is kind of more real and sorted, you know, and you can end up, you know, that's quite a common feeling too, isn't it? Everyone's doing it better. They know what they're doing. They know how to move around the world smoothly and get on with things and have a full life. And what I wanted was for her to come out of the house and actually be confronted by how crazy everyday small things are, to challenge her sense of being crazy. So yeah, it's great that you saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think everyone, I think that it is a very common feeling.
Mm.
You know, no matter how successful, how confident people feel, that it was, you know, beneath or underneath that is that, oh, if they really knew me.
Yes.
They'd know what a mess
I am. If they could really see.
Yeah.
Yeah. And quite often that fear of being found out, being seen, you know, which she also has. I mean, it's mentioned right at the end, isn't it? She's out in the world and, you know, she's kind of edging towards a bit more of a normal life, whatever that is. But there's still that feeling that remains, which is so hard to shake off, isn't it? actually, if people could really see.
But I think, and there is such a stigma about it. It was interesting because you do that for most of the characters.
Mm.
But there are some exceptions. Her mother, for instance.
Yes.
Who is, it seems, I mean, I think everyone else in the book is manageably crazy. And I think everyone I know is sort of manageably crazy.
Yes.
You know, we go off the rails
kind of like
occasionally.
Ordinary crazy.
Yeah. You work a day crazy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You know, or you're neurotic, whatever it is.
Yes.
But we all go through, you know, dips and highs and lows.
Yeah,
and
it's all very Woody Allen.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think that's quite normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Within the range of normal, mm-hmm. within the range of functional.
Yes.
The way the mother functioned was not functional.
No,
It was abusive. Mm. But you shied away from, for the most part, her interior life.
Yes.
Why was that?
That was because I really wanted the focus to be Miriam finding her voice. And she has been so overshadowed. And actually so is Ralph, but he's been overshadowed by something really boisterously joyful, something really the opposite, really.
Joy can be very oppressive.
Yeah. Enforced optimism.
Hideously
exactly.
joyful.
There's nothing that makes you more miserable than enforced optimism. So I wanted it to be her story. So I kind of went, I felt like I went as far as I could with the mother's story. So I think it's chapter 22 where I go back into her childhood very briefly as a way of, I suppose, humanising her, showing something of her. And I purposely kept that separate. So there are flashbacks, aren't there? There are flashbacks of Miriam and Frances, her mother, together and things like that. But I purposely kept that cut off and separate. So it's away from Miriam's story. So it didn't kind of pollute her again, I suppose, in a way. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I wanted there to be a clear path for Miriam to move through, if that makes sense.
Yes. And it definitely did work. Mm. As you're saying that, I'm realizing that in the book.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Another thing you bring up, because you are a psychotherapist yourself.
Yeah.
And for that reason, you know, therapists can't expose their personal lives. Why is that so stringent?
Why don't you expose your personal life in the work, do you mean? I think things have changed, actually. I think years ago, especially with, you know, more traditional psychoanalysis, it was seen as expert, patient, neutral, you know, blank screen, and then the client or patient, as it was, in many cases, could come along, and it was all about projection, and, you know, projecting whatever was going on in that person's interior world, projecting onto the therapist, you know. So the issues were seen in that way. But I think things have shifted now, you know, especially like things have moved from being called patient to client. It's become much more equal. It's not seen as expert and, you know, and client anymore. It's much more equal. So I think there is a shift. I mean, if people ask me questions, I will answer them. You know, I will try and be open. I'm there for them. So the focus is them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't adopt that kind of blank, you know, fully blank screen.
But yeah, but for Ralph, that is an interesting and uncomfortable and painful, it seems to me, because on one hand, he's gone into this, sort of been shoehorned into this profession, but it's something that he is naturally good at.
Mm.
As a caring person, as someone who listens empathically and cares for people.
Yeah.
But then his whole life is exposed in a way that it's not supposed to be.
Yes, yes. There's too much detail out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, his clients know things about his, you know, his what he's doing at weekends. You know, they know the small details. They know that his mother has knitted him a jumper that he's wearing for the sessions. That's too much. Clearly that's too much.
Yeah.
But again, it's interesting what you said, because he's naturally good at that profession, but again, it's the same as everything. He didn't choose it. He kind of ended up drifting into it because he was having these long conversations with his clients as a gardener. So again, it's not chosen. And he is a psychotherapist who actually doesn't know himself. He has terrible self-awareness. So he's an interesting, interesting character in that way.
Well, and also in that way, a physician on thyself.
Yeah, yeah.
And Well, and also, well, I think that's becoming as the stigma on mental health is being crumbled happily.
It is.
What a recurring story more and more is that people go into this profession because they feel the need themselves.
Yes.
And yet that adoption of that, I'm the professional, I'm fine, I beat this.
Yeah.
Isn't helpful.
Yeah.
to the person themselves, because they're like, I'm struggling.
Absolutely.
I'm a bullshit artist, and this person's coming to me.
Well, I think that's why as well things have shifted, and there is now this openness. Mm-hmm. And the only difference is, I think, if you're open about yourself and say, yes, you know, I do understand something of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about giving that person space to talk about what that's like to hear that. I suppose that's the difference.
Mm.
Yeah. What's that like?
And so, what made you turn to writing?
Well, I've always written, I think, for quite strong personal reasons. And it's always just been about which form I chose, really. And I don't know how to explain it, really. I have to really work hard to think clearly when I speak. So, like, now I'm working really hard. But when I write, it's like I access a whole completely different part of my brain. I can think clearly. I can remember things. Talking, I have a terrible memory. I have to kind of visually stack things up. So I think I've always written as a child because it's how I make sense of things. It's how I articulate something. It's how I kind of almost feel like I exist, really.
Bypass the noise.
Yes. So I've always done it in various different ways, you know, in publishing, short stories, and now with the novel. So I think there's been an evolutionary process going on.
Yeah. It's very exciting. I mean, it's your own voice is coming through as well.
Yes.
You know, you're giving yourself
of course
a voice here.
Yes.
That's very exciting.
It is exciting.
Very empowering.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to be recognized for something that you've always done for yourself.
Yes.
Is quite wonderful.
You can rely on Radio Gorgeous.
And are you working on another novel, or what else are you working on?
Yeah, I've started another one, and it's all like it's very similar to when I started this one. So the initial process for me is all visual. There aren't words; it's not wordy; it's visual. I mean,
What did you see when you started?
Well, this one started. I had persistent images of Miriam Delaney. I could see Miriam Delaney completely. As if it was like I was remembering someone I'd met. It was really curious. I could see her standing at the window. I could still see the house in a suburb, a kind of nondescript suburb.
Surbiton.
Yes. So I could see her, and then I could see inside the house, and there was kind of like an aerial view, and I could see a man. It's quite cinematic, really. A man sleeping in the woods. I could see the shack. And it gradually, the details came, like the cuckoo clock on the wall. I could see that white cuckoo clock and these brown and orange carpets. And I could smell the house. So it was like memories coming in or something. And that's how it began. And that's how this is beginning, images. It's curious.
Fantastic.
Very visual. And even, I don't see that in chapters. I see it in scenes. I see it in episodes almost. It's almost like a box set or something, a book box set. Yeah, it's all very visual. How I remember it is not with words. It's, pivotal moments. Yeah, I think I have
very
more of a visual mind, strangely.
Well, have you worked visually before?
No.
I mean, because you said when you're but when you're saying when you're making sense of things, you have to visually
I do. My mind is far more visual. I think it's probably why my memory is so terrible, because it's full of images, quite photographic memory. But no, I haven't worked in anything visual.
I'm thinking
new directions.
Exactly. And as a well, because it also occurs to me that stories, human stories, are what grasps you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And seeing
seeing
transformation.
Mm. Yes, you know? Which is exactly what the book is about, isn't it?
Change. And your work is about as well. You know, just helping all of us manage ourselves, really.
Yes.
I mean, everyone in the book, the only obstacles that they face, and they all are hindered, is themselves.
Yes, by themselves.
Is internal.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've always known that about myself, that I am the biggest thing in my way.
Yes.
And I seem to be tremendous. I'm everywhere. You know, when I can't do something, I am everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you get out of your own way?
How do I? This is reminding me of a bit in the book. Actually, I think was kind of linked to me. There's a, you know, how Miriam always she almost has to do the self-talk thing. I mean, it's so common, isn't it? Our thoughts kind of batter us, don't they? They tell us we can't do something, we're not good enough. And for me, one of the biggest issues has always been public speaking. I think because of the thing about not thinking clearly when I'm speaking as opposed to writing. And I just avoided it. I avoided it. I went to great lengths. I always avoided it. And if you want to write a novel and you want to be published, you can't, in this day and age, you cannot avoid it. So
there's one Italian woman.
Oh yes.
The only one. That's it. She can hide in J.D. Salinger.
Yes.
That's it. You're not those
her mystery.
Two.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, she's cornered the market on that.
I was going to say, that's done now. No one else can do that, can they? Yeah. So I think it's about that. You know, I can tell myself a story. I'm not the sort of person that can do that. I don't do speaking. I can't do it. And you can live by that, can't you? And then you kind of get to a point where you have to interrupt that story and go, actually, is this really true now, or is this just habit? Maybe it was true when I was a child. Maybe it was true when I was a teenager. But is it really true now? So that's what I'm doing at the moment. To kind of do all this stuff. Yeah.
Well, we should always question. I mean, question, you know, I mean, every theory, every, you know, that's why religion bothers me so much, because we're told not to question, you know.
Yeah.
But I think we should question all the time, question ourselves, question.
Yeah, be curious. Know. Yeah.
Unfortunately, my son has adopted this attitude.
Always questioning you.
Yes, exactly. I have to live, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword, but, you know, hoisted on my own petard, I think it's called. Yeah. Is this working? We are so habitual.
Yes.
And so
deeply.
Lazy.
Yeah, and the thoughts, they just run, and we assume that that's our personality. That's just who we are, because we listen to the thoughts on repeat, don't we? You know, until you actually, I mean, that's what people do in therapy. I think they realize that the self was actually a completely unreliable narrator, you know, and you have to stop and say, is this really, you know, I mean, this is what the book is about, isn't it? Is this really my story, or can I rewrite it? Can I do something else, something different?
And we always can.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if
there's always possibility.
Tiny and minor, we can.
Yeah. The tiny changes make a big difference. They change what it feels to be ourselves on that day, don't they? And then it builds up.
Exactly.
Yeah. But small things.
You can still whisper, but if you put a megaphone in front of it, it's real loud.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Rachel.
My pleasure. it's been fun.
Wonderful to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you very much.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us. Contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com. And to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
Take me to heart, and I'll always love you. And nobody can make me do wrong. Take me for granted, leaving love unsure. Power weak and temptation strong. A woman's only human, you should understand. She's not just a plaything, she's flesh and blood, just like a man. If you wanna
if you wanna do right, home and day, woman, you've gotta be a do right, home and day, man. A woman's only human. Bitch, you should understand. She's not just a plaything. She's flesh and blood, just like a man. If you wanna do right,
this has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.